All right, welcome back, everybody, or welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and we are given this plot on 570 to talk about things that are happening in tech. The phone lines are open to you all program long, so if you have any questions or comments, you can give me a call, 330-729-9977. We also have a pretty cool text messaging system that if you want to interact with any of the hosts, you can text 333-1570. And then it gets distributed to whomever is on the air at the time. I like this because if I'm driving around and I'm a junkie for talk radio, that sometimes I don't have the time to be able to make a full phone call in. And in fact, I think I've only called a talk station maybe twice. I listen like crazy, but I'm not a big contributor. But given the option to do text messaging, I'm very much likely to throw out a couple of grenades here and there. So anyway, 330-333-1570 is the way to text me during the program, and I'll do my best to answer anything on the show, and I would appreciate it. I hope you guys are enjoying it this Saturday. This will be the last show we have until we're going to skip next week. I'm going to actually go on the road. It's Gusta Bus time, so summer is rolling in, and we're going to start the Joe's going to try to make some money from the road and pushing on some of the technologies that, you know, get business done. I mean, what's beautiful is that the whole COVID thing sort of like added standards where you can move around and still be able to make money and do your job from places that are not in an office space. So we decentralized the work, the work standard there. So it's going to be much easier, and there's going to be a much more tolerance for getting done stuff done like that. So we will see how that goes this week. But I just want to give you that mention that I won't be here next week because I will definitely be out on the road. And I can never be sure that where I'm going is going to have much in the way of Wi-Fi or cellular or any kind of data for now. But I'm going to, first stop is Boston, and then I'm going to head north, and I'm going to go as north as probably Maine before then boomeranging back and heading back down to Ohio. So this is going to be a pretty cool trip. Never been up beyond New York City. So this will be my most northerly trip, and going to try to get it to be as north as I possibly can. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Cindy. Cindy, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt your story where you're going to your plans that you're telling us about. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, no problem. What can I do for you?
I have a XS operating system, and I got so frustrated because, you know, it blocks everything, and you have to go a roundabout way to get into anything because of the S on it and the way Microsoft has programmed it. So I took the S off. And I thought, well, no big deal. I'll just take the S off and then I'll put it back on because I needed to do some Zoom calls and I don't know. So I took it off and then I found out I can't add it back on. Is that true?
That is correct. Yeah. It's a one-way doorway.
And I didn't know that. And now I can't get it back on, which I'm happy to just not have it because then I signed up for Norton protection. Hopefully that'll be enough to keep, you know, people from.
So over the years that they've had this S version of the operating system, I've literally had maybe one person decide to stick with it. So even if you wouldn't have done it now, I have a feeling that you would have done it eventually. So it's probably a good move. Even if you're a little unhappy about it, it's probably still a good move.
Okay. And then is Norton a good program? That's what I just added Norton, to keep people from hacking my system. But do you think that'll be enough to protect me, or?
Honestly, anything, whatever works. Some people have a lot of success with the Norton products. Some people are working on just with what Windows offers, and it has to line up with how you operate. If you feel like you do riskier things, then you want to have a little bit more protection. I'm not a fan of the Norton when they started going off and doing all of the security packages. So it's like an all-in-one thing where you install the firewall and the antivirus and the browser protection and all of that stuff, because it would just make the machine run slower. And I wasn't a big fan of that. But if it's working for you, that's all that really matters.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to share that with everybody, but maybe you think I'm better off without that S system.
Absolutely. So thank you, Cindy. Appreciate the phone call, and I wish you luck with that. And just to kind of let anybody who's not in Cindy's position here. So Microsoft put out a version of Windows, okay, and called it S, and it's a very limited version of the regular Windows 10 operating system. And when I say limited, it means that you can't install programs. If you install something, it has to come from the App Store. So if Cindy wanted to put Norton Antivirus, the traditional way of putting it on there, she probably couldn't do it because it's a limited deal. So the benefit of that is that it's probably harder time for things that are not supposed to be there to get on there, right? And so it's if you have maybe somebody, one of your relatives, not real savvy with computers, and they just need internet, then that would be sufficient. It would be totally fine because it's a more secure version of the operating system. But as I said to her, not many people, once they know what Windows 10 is supposed to be like, will tolerate Windows 10S. It's a one-way door. You can't de-upgrade it. Now, I think you can make a restoration if you wanted to go back and make it factory default. It would probably be S, but then you'd have to load everything back up again. So that would be the only thing that I would add. I'd have to look into that and see if that's true. Let's go to Bob next. Bob, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Okay, I had an incident that just happened last night. A good friend of mine emails me and tells me that he needs a favor, and what he's requesting is that I go to eBay and get a $300 card, a $100 card, and a $50 card. And he apologizes because he cannot call me on the phone because his phone is not sending out and receiving. And then I become a little suspicious, I type back that I don't do eBay and I don't know how to go ahead and secure this for him. And so I'm going back and forth for a little while. And then the friend of mine that came through with that email name and so forth said that his computer got hacked, that this is a scam. And in the meantime, these people were saying, no, all you have to do now, since you don't know how to do eBay, is to go to Best Buy and you can make the free purchases. So my question is, do you think my computer is hacked also because they were able to look me up?
Probably not. I mean, I would use it as a, give yourself a chance by looking through all your passwords. Maybe that'll cause you to change all of your password just to be sure. But we often wonder, after someone hacks someone's computer, what the heck could they do with that information? And we had a local celebrity, same thing happened to them a number of years ago, where they hacked her email account and also her Messenger, or I think it was AOL Messenger at the time. And that's what they did en masse. They just basically went through all of the contacts, because once you get their password, they can log in as you. And now to do something useful, they're either going to buy something in your name or they're going to harvest the people that you talk to. And in this case, they sent a message to everybody on their contacts list or everything an email to everyone she's corresponded with in the last year and said, hey, I'm in Bermuda. I'm stuck. I need $200. Can you send it to me? And that person got these people to respond by sending them money. So it was totally effective, and that's why they end up doing it. But I think you're okay, but I would take the opportunity to change some passwords if they've been out there a while.
Yes, okay. Thank you kindly. If we had the time, I also had one that was called in to me that was a scam. They told me it was my grandson, and that he was on vacation, and he did a dumb thing, and he needs some money, that he got into an accident on this island, and it really sounded like him, and he knew a few things, so I took a deep breath, and I said, Carson, give me the name of your three dogs, and the guy hung up.
Oh, yeah, well done.
He had three dogs, and he wouldn't know his names.
Beautiful, Bob. That was perfect. All right. All right, thank you for calling. I appreciate you sharing that with us, and I hope that people listening will hear those stories and kind of know how this stuff goes down. I did a series on scam baiting a couple of weeks ago, and my goal is to spend about 3 hours every week, not harassing, but just wasting the time of people who are scamming. And so what I try to do is I try to get a scammer to approach me. I bait them to approach me. And I'll tell you, it's a little harder. It's harder than you would suspect. So think about it this way. The couple of methods that scammers use to get to you in the first place, sometimes they will use methods that we all use, such as like searching. So let's just say everybody's searching, where is my IRS payment, right? So you get stats on it that says everybody's looking to see where their IRS payment is, or their whatever that thing was called. And so they see this, and there's 100 million people a week that are searching that phrase. So what do? I put together and I publish an ad that makes my listing come up on Google, right? And in that 100 million a week, now Google takes those ads down as soon as they realize that they're in the network. But it doesn't stop anybody from just putting it out there. All you've got to do is connect to those words and you get an ad placed. And then so some of these ads that pop up at the top of Google only last 30 minutes or less. So I follow it. There's a website that tracks this kind of behavior. And there'll be some of these scam links that gets published in this database, and then a couple minutes later you go look for them and it says that they've already been removed. And so that's what happened. You have a relative who types that in. The search result that comes up first is this ad that actually pushes you off to the scam. They generate a site that looks like the IRS website. They call, they give information, and before you know it, it's too late. They've given something to somebody who's not the IRS, but it happens with, help, my Canon printer's not working, and my email password is changing. Anything that's commonly searched through Google, I can go purchase an ad that will get you to my fake site rather than the real one. And then I'll fish the information completely out of you. So the question that gets asked is what do they do with the information once they have it? Sometimes, like the ones that I just mentioned, they just try to get you to do dumb stuff like pay me through gift cards. Like if anybody out there actually does this, right? I can't believe it. That if you were dealing with a reputable company, that somebody could give you a reason good enough that paying the IRS and Best Buy gift cards was the best way to make a payment to the IRS, right? So I just put that in your head, that if anybody asks you to make payment with a gift card, you have to ask yourself, why a gift card? Why an untrackable, anonymous currency that is not regulated by any government agency? Why would anybody pick that rather than a system that is highly regulated and can be tracked and can, you know, have protections through various government systems, right? That has to pop in your brain. So you want to talk to maybe your elder relatives that could easily fall victim to this, because again, I can't imagine that stuff making sense. But in the moment, these people are so good at scamming. I've been on the phone with them. They are so good at turning on a dime. They're so dynamic. They've taken all kind of hypotheticals. They know exactly what to say. They know when to be aggressive. They know when to be empathetic. They know what tone to use. They know how to respond. These aren't people who do this one time, right? These are expert scammers. And so they're, you know, you and I could say, well, who would do that? But when you're on the phone with them, They're manipulative. They're very good at what they do. So don't underestimate that one day, you know, you're someone you care about will have to be on the phone with one of these jerks, and you want them to know that your words are in their head saying, if anybody ever asks you to make a payment through a gift card by at the grocery store and time's running out and you got to do it right now, or a warrant's going to be issued for your arrest, and that's the quickest way we can get the money. Let's do this. I'm on your side. Let's do it. Talk them in that scenario and say, this is what they're going to try. And if they ever do it, just hang up the phone. And I'll tell you, there's been a lot of legitimate people who have called me that I won't give any information. And I know they are who they are, but I say, yeah, I don't give out for people call me. I don't give any information to them. So I'll have to call you back. I'll call the number that's on my statement, and I don't know what they ever wanted. And I don't care. I really don't care if I've missed some information. It's the principle that has kept me safe up to this point. And I'm going to follow through. So just because someone, you know, hits the doorbell, you do not owe them answering the door, no matter what they say, no matter what threat they may make. They message you, they call you, they text you, they email you. You owe them nothing. And if they have some information that piques your interest, call them back through the statement. Or like Bob said, ask them about their dogs and a question to see if you can unearth their validity. So 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, your host. We open up the floor to talk about things that are happening in tech. Usually the big, at least once a month, we'll do some kind of security episode where we'll tell you about what's profiling, what's happening. And since we started doing the scamming and the first call ended up being something about scamming, we'll go on a little bit about it. And let me share this with them. I may have shared this story with you guys already, and forgive me if I have, but here's the deal. So one of the like normal scams you are just okay. If you're really up on your paying attention, you can usually spot them. But there is one that was really good. And so here's how it worked. They actually enabled a real company as part of this scam. And what they did was think about it this way, that I'll call you, and then while I'm on the line with you, I will connect into, we'll say, eBay. And this is how it actually went. So I called in a number, so it said, is your eBay, your eBay account was hacked. Your eBay account was hacked, right? That's the term. And I come up to this technical security page that said, if your eBay was hacked, call this number right away. And I called the number, right? And it called one person, the incoming, and then it recalled another company because there was like a 5-second difference between when I called and an answer happened, no voice, to when then an eBay representative picked up. And then so I was actually talking to an eBay representative. So it was a pass-through. There was a guy listening in between me and eBay. So if I picture going down, hey, I just got this thing that said my eBay email stuff is bad, right? And then they would say, okay, well, let me check your account. And you're like, my account is blah, 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 and my security code is blah, 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 right? So the guy in the middle is listening to whatever you're saying to eBay. So whatever you gave to eBay – you gave to the third party that was in between those calls. So it gets you kind of wondering like how many times that you're on the phone. Is phone even a secure enough channel to even give secure information? I would feel much safer on a computer giving my social than on the phone giving my social every day, because it could be manipulated. It can be intercepted. It could be manipulated. And I don't know who's on the call with me. There's no way to identify how many people you're passing through to get to the actual endpoint. This isn't like a overdramatized version to scare you. I'm giving you a real situation where I'm surprised more of that doesn't happen. So if I wanted to fish information, let's just say I had a multifaceted attack. I got some information on you, but it's not enough to do anything with. I can't hack you based on that. So I use the information I do have to get you to tell eBay some more information, and I gather some more. These targeted attacks where they take, you know, 5 different calls and assemble things about you. They put a profile together on you, and then maybe after 5th or 6th call to you, you've given them enough that you then go out there and make a purchase or scam you or get a password reset or whatever. So be very careful about what the information you give up on the phone. We see a bunch of these social media questions. Like they're kind of cute and clever, and what they're intended to do is get you to tell them what your password reset clues are, right? So let's just say that they go out there and say, hey, most people set their password reset clues. They know when they pick the option, what's your middle name and what's the this and what's the this, right? They statistics publish about what people usually pick. Who is your best friend in high school? And then so they run these campaigns, these scam campaigns that says, hey, what was your best friend in high school? So that then they can take what people typically pick and then what you just told everybody on social media, and they throw that into your profile. And then if I go to reset your password and you picked who was my best friend in high school, I use Jim Smith, boom, I reset your password and now I got you. So you got to be very careful of what you put on social media as a response to those questions that seem very similar that go along with what people typically use for security resets or password resets. And when you're setting those, Don't use those typical ones. Use, and I'll give you, let me give you my hint here. I actually have created a person that doesn't really exist, right? And that person, I made them up and I memorized everything. They have a birthday, they have a name, they have address. And guess whose information I use when I set up my security? What's their mother's maiden name? Well, guess what? They have one and it's fake. It only exists in my head and I've never told anybody about them. And I'm not going to tell you about them, but this fake person has all of my security resets and I use the same ones every time, but it's always this fictitious dude that has a birthday, has a street where he grew up on, has a best friend in high school, has a high school mascot, has a mother's maiden name, all of this, a whole security profile for a completely fictitious person that I use because you won't be able to sniff me out because I gave you my real birthday and my real street and my real whatever. So there's a little nugget for you. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer and your host for this Saturday show. This is your show. We talk about things happening with tech, answer your questions, or give you some guidance or directions, do what I can to help. Number is 330-729-9977. And let's take a call. Mike is out there. Mike, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi. Yeah, I just heard your last segment about scammers and using Amazon gift cards, paying the IRS and Best Buy gift cards.
Right.
One of my favorite YouTube channels, I just wanted to share this with the audience, is Kit Boga, KITBOGA. This man is a hero. He spends all day calling these people so that they can't, steal from your grandma. All the minutes that they spend talking to him, they are not stealing from your grandma, and it's hilarious to watch. He's an artist.
Hey, is that the dude that has actually security camera footage from inside of a couple of those call centers?
A different individual. Okay. He's very cool too. I watch him. He's called Revenge Scammer or something like that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've listened to hours and hours and hours of these people just because it's funny, to listen to kind of justice being done in real time. That's
right.
Kind of cool. But also, I do think to myself, wow, these people are just scum. They are taking advantage of the extremely old, maybe people who don't have critical thinking skills, and they're just stealing what they can.
Yep, it's terrible. And we're trying to do what we can to educate from the consumer standpoint so you see them coming, and then we too are trying to waste a little time if we can. Have you ever talked to any of these scammers?
No, I've never really talked, but I get their voicemails all the time.
Yeah.
Just because basically everyone's phone number is public,
Yeah. Okay, Mike, thank you.
So that's it, yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being out there. Appreciate you sharing with us. It's just a matter of time. I mean, they are so prevalent. If you haven't received one, I mean, there's some times where I get a call and I don't have my recording stuff set up close enough, and it's a missed one because it would have been a really good one. The ones that I have to make aren't as quality because I'm not just sitting around waiting for them to come in. I have to set it up to make it believable. So it's almost like they're suspicious of me and my call more so than if they would have called me. They would have tried a little bit harder, but I'm just never in the right place or time, to pull those off. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Joe next. Joe, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Quick question. What do you think of Asus motherboards?
Love them. They're one of my favorite. And early on when performance was a big factor, there were probably four or five high profile names, and then there was everybody else that were doing value ones. Asus had one of my best balanced boards for performance and also the integrity of the electronics.
Well, that's good to hear. All right, Joe, thanks. I just wanted to get your opinion on that one.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling. I appreciate you being out there. And so, we've been buying them for years, but they also have since, started developing full system. And I don't quite like their full systems as much as I do their boards. I mean, I'm one of those tech guys who I just like to assemble my own stuff because every computer I build is for a different reason, and it's not like a one configuration works in all of the the things I want to put it for. Now, commercial side, you'll notice all of our commercial builds are essentially the same. We got i5 because it's like right down the middle. It has the best amount of performance for the least amount of R&D costs built in. It's so cost is right in line in performance. 16 gigs of memory. Because that's, 8's on the low side, 32 is a little bit overkill. But in a commercial setting, 16 is that sweet spot where you're not overbuying and underbuying. Obviously, a solid-state drive. We use Samsung products for our solid-state drives. Not that the other, Kingston or whatever isn't good, but we have two profiles. So we have the Samsung regular and the Samsung red. And so we get a better performance. Like if you need, I think it's disk seek time or data access time is actually faster with the regular version rather than the red. The seek time or how it comes up with the data after it pulls it off of the drive is a little bit better than a normal one. So the typical, the middle of the line one was a really good performer, in our tests. So that's why we ended up with that. So there's sort of like logic behind every component that we picked out. I ended up like I like ASUS and their board, and I like the processor that they had in it. But I was the other functions they worked well. There was nothing that I disagreed with. The cost was in line, but it wasn't stuff that I would have picked out. And I like picking my my own components out. So thank you for that call. I appreciate it. And if any of you have any hardware questions, I'm real, like I said, I am real particular. We have a pretty good opinion on, why you buy it. We had the discussion last week, whether or not, in the future people are going to buy desktops. And after the show, it was towards the end. It might have not been after, but towards the end, we had a texter that called in and said, yeah, most people have already bailed on the desktop. And, it wouldn't take, but you stop using it for a couple weeks, just try to use your phone and try to push everything through that you probably too would, unless you're in a development environment. There are true cases for developers and, video and audio and things that it's just not as easy on a touch screen. You need a mouse and you need that input to be able to be exacting. I definitely have a preference for a desktop in those situations, but for everything else, I'm just good enough to do it on a notebook or a tablet or a phone. And so most of you have moved on because that's what most of you did anyway. You did messaging through social media. You did email. You looked stuff up. It was all like one way that way. So, you could totally get by. So I bet you in the future that what ends up happening is that the desktop sales every year gets less and less and less, which means that there's less pieces of the pie for companies to fight over. And then you have less computer builders. And when you have less computer builders, they have to make up the difference in selling other products and then whatever those innovative products. It actually sets up a new innovation cycle because they need things for people to get excited about. And if you've noticed, since Steve Jobs passing, I haven't really been excited about a new product coming to market. And it's not just the pitching that happened. I didn't buy into the words of Steve Jobs. I just knew that he was a dude that was in the background just like trying to push the envelope at breakneck speeds. And you just don't have that with the Ballmers or whoever's in head of all of these companies. It's getting very vanilla, kind of very boring. We need some more Elon Musks in the other, electronics and computers and that kind of thing. But you need profit incentive and until people get a handle on a sure thing. Because if Steve were alive, we'd be on the iPhone 75, right? He would just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And when you have boards of directors, they're looking to see what's going to happen, and they're feeding into trends instead of starting them. Because starting trends, it's a little bit risky. You got to have a little bit more of an innovation mind. And I think companies go safe play, and even big companies go safe play. They're not going to stick their necks out and lose, and then, publicly traded companies get disastrously penalized when they make moves that don't end up working out. So anyway, 330-729-9977. I'm going to check the text messages. I haven't checked those for the show yet, so let me jump over there and check those. Okay. And there was actually one from last Saturday I'll look up after this break. But let me tell you about this. I talked with a customer this week, and from what happened at the pipeline, those of you who don't know, they got hit with a ransomware attack. And they call them ransomware attacks. It's essentially a piece of software somehow gets on a machine, and it encrypts all of the files that are on the machine, and it holds them ransom until you pay. So it's not really an attack, right? It got launched, whether external, internal hacking, somebody opened up an email, whatever. It's really what happened is they don't have access to the computers. And when you lose access to some of your computers, what will happen is it creates a pause it, get overhand, because that means that's a breach. Somebody was in, somebody did something, and now the whole thing comes down to it, because you don't want the breach to continue to domino down and start taking more and more systems out. So the reason it's considered an attack, because computers that weren't infected were taken down as a security precaution so that the infection from that encryption virus didn't spread to computers that controlled more things. So in the pipeline attack, it might not have actually taken down any of the pumping, you know, any of the computers that controlled operations, but because it was in the network now, that's what kicked off the computers that killed operations. So just so you know. But anyway, same thing happened at a meatpacking plant last week. And so when this stuff starts happening, customers start calling and saying, if that happened to us, what would we do? And I'm sort of like a redundancy king. So I like to have plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and plan E, right? I have lots of redundancy. And in this place, we already had four levels of redundancy. The typical redundancy that you want to have is one, you want to have, well, we'll say you have the original copy. You have a picture of your deceased relative and sitting on your hard drive, right? You have, that's copy one. That's version one. Second version is going to be, you want to put that in a different place. So you plug in an external drive and you set up a backup program that copies everything from your local drive to the backup. Now you have a second redundancy. You have the original and now you have the one on the backup drive. So now if the main drive dies, you can always restore it back from the backup. Okay, so that's number two. Number three would be some kind of offline, and I'm going to use this in two different ways. So I'm going to use it in the actual, and then I'm going to add a little bit of words to it. So the actual is an offsite is where if I would then take that and upload that picture to Google Photos or Dropbox or one of those other places. So now you have a copy that's the original. You have a copy that is part of the external hard drive so that if the main drive goes, and if there's fire in your office, that picture is also on Dropbox. So that's A, B, and C. Now, another version of that would be offline. Now, when viruses creep and these encryption attacks happen, they basically get on your network and they look for stuff, right? And so what you're going to have is anything that is online and is visible to the virus can be infected by the virus. So let's just say you have a backup on the server, and then you have an original and a backup on the server. Well, the encryption virus comes in there and says, oh, here's the original, encrypted. And then it keeps searching and searching. And it sees your backup. And it's like, oh, backup, encrypted. Now your backup's encrypted. So you're not able to restore from it. It wasn't truly redundant because it was online, and anything that's online is susceptible to that infection. So if the computer can see it, then so can the virus, and so can the infection. And so in this offline version, meaning that something that cannot be seen by a virus. So in the fourth dynamic, I have two external hard drives, right? And every Wednesday I come in and I move the power cable from the top hard drive to the bottom one. And the next Wednesday I go from the bottom one back to the top one. So one is always in the online state. And I only put one power cable there so they're not accidentally left online. There's only one. There's only one could be powered. And so you change it, and one goes offline and one stays online. Now, in the sense of a fire, that offline or online backup is not going to help you, right? Because it's going to burn with everything that's in the building. But if you have one that's going out to Dropbox and then you have a duplicate that's going on a different hard drive, now the scenario, if you have a hard drive failure on the main one, you're covered with the external. If there's a fire, you're covered with the online. If you get infection, then you're covered with the copy that was sitting in an offline state. So then you start taking these susceptibilities, the risk of having this, and you invest just as much money that accomplishes the job. I mean, we had one company that absolutely needed to be back in business within 4 hours. Well, you have to run your backups in a mode that gets them back up. So let's just say your whole stuff is on the cloud and the cloud takes 24 hours to download. When's the soonest that I can get you online? 24 hours from the time that I've gotten control of the network or gotten a piece of hardware. That would not be a good backup if the need is that I need to be back up online. Because in this case, this was a retail deal, and they're doing $100,000 a day in sales. So every day they're offline, $100,000 less. How much are you willing to spend of that $100,000 to be able to make sure that you can still fetch that revenue without being offline? Because I don't know what it costs on that pipeline to be down for a week, but it probably wasn't cheap. And I don't know what it costs to have that meatpacking plant down for a week, but I know that wasn't cheap. So spending proportionally to satisfying whatever need that you had is sort of the line of thinking. And that's what we talk people through on the Youngstown Computer end, is we paint the picture. You tell me what your biggest fear is, and then we'll throw a bunch of hardware at it that accomplishes it. And then, we audit it. We check in on it every once in a while. There's some that we set up in, 10 years ago. And every couple months we stop in, check in, see how it's working. It's been working for 10 years. And once a year we say, hey, same as normal. You got any new considerations you'd like us to help you with? And if they say yes, cool. If they say no, then keep on keeping on. And I think we've probably had maybe four encryption attacks with our current customers. And any of the ones that we were managing backups, we were able to just restore all of the data that was encrypted, and then we were right back in business. And that was good enough for most of those people. There was one company that got hit with an encryption virus that had to pay the ransom. And I want to say, let's see, that was probably every bit of 2 years. And it was something that they had to put through their insurance company, and the insurance company did due diligence on trying to do an investigation through it. So it's definitely worth it to have proper insurance, have backups, and keep up on it to make sure that you're putting that out as a legitimate hypothetical. So 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBM. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. Let me tell you a little bit about Youngstown Computer, because that is what makes this show possible, the services that we provide for the community, both residential and commercial services. If you have any needs, whether it be upgrades or repairs or new equipment, we'd really appreciate it if you'd write our number down. And if the need arises, we'd appreciate the call, 330-259-7278. And we ask people, put that on a sticky note and put it on the side of your computer. Because chances are you don't have anything right now that you need, but there will be something in the future, and I'd like you to look up there, see our number there, and give us a call when that happens. So I'd appreciate that. Again, that's 330-259-7278. It's Youngstown Computer. We have an office on Youngstown Pullen Road in Struthers. You can visit youngstowncomputer.com to look through some of our services, and I believe the appointment scheduler is up and running. And you can schedule your own appointments, make payment ahead of time, and list some details, and then we get someone to come out to you. We both have in-store, and we also have remote services. So if you'd prefer us come to you rather than you come to us, you just have to make the preference. We started doing Wednesdays. So if you need us to come to you, just request the service, and then we'll turn around and give you a Wednesday scheduling. We'll come out to you, do the appointment on site as much as we can. So the value of us coming to you is that there are a lot of problems are associated with an environmental issue. What's plugged into it, how it's plugged in. So when you bring it to us, you remove the environmental issue, and it's sometimes harder to replicate the problem once it's out of, its regular location. And so that makes it a little bit easier troubleshooting it. And then there's some that, yeah, absolutely need to go back to the bench, and because it just takes too much or too long to sit there on site. Some stuff takes waiting, and it's hard to, sit there and wait for a computer to get done with something. But anyway, both of those are on the docket. So if you need something, 330-259-7278, we really appreciate. You guys have always come through. I mean, all of our endeavors, whether it be, computer, whether it be Makerspace, the stuff we're doing with the cities, merchandise, just about everything that we've ever done, you guys have shown up and shown support, and we really appreciate it. We have you know, 100% loyalty to this area, giving it right back at you because you guys have been so loyal to us. So we appreciate everybody and everything that you've all done for us over the years. So 330-259-7278. Let's see. As far as SpaceX, I have not talked about SpaceX in a couple shows, or maybe I have. Maybe I should talk about it on every show. I don't know. But they had another launch for some more of their Starlink satellites. We bring this up quite a bit because a lot of us in Ohio are waiting for them to release availability. I'm on pre-order. A couple callers of a couple weeks ago said that they were also on pre-order. What this means is you put up $100, and as soon as the let me do some explaining first. SpaceX has a constellation of satellites that are hanging up in a low Earth orbit shell. And so these satellites are pointed down, and they provide internet. So the whole thing, they beam up an internet connection to the satellite, and then all of the satellites then, through lasers, talk to one another. So you might have Seattle, Washington, piping up, or you know California, piping up an internet connection, and everybody who's connected to that shell has internet. So it could be in Africa, right? So it pipes up in California, and it beams up to these satellites, and there might be a satellite hanging over Africa that now has internet that's coming originally from California, but because the whole thing is being shared all around the globe, that you know it's shared internet that way. But anyway, us in Ohio, with less satellites, you have less coverage. So you might have a satellite that's close enough to connect to, like right now. In an hour from now, it might move out of range, and you might not have another one in orbit yet. So then you have an outage, and that's really been the holdup. So that they haven't, released it in our areas. They've picked 100%. We're in a covered area, but they've picked municipalities, but counties that have low population densities, and sort of like if Elon Musk looked at a map and said who's underserved with internet. Those are the areas that he's starting with allowing people to get internet first. So you and I, we've got good internet. We don't need this. So we're going to be lesser on the list than somebody who is in a rural area or a rural town that has access to nothing. And if they get internet for $100 a month that drops out every couple hours, it's still better than having nothing or DSL or expensive cellular. So it's one of those things where it will gradually get to us. When it is. But anyway, that launch happened yesterday. A lot of talk about what's next with that, because these last maybe, I don't know, 40 launches or so have been primarily Starlink satellites. And then you had a couple of communication satellites that hitched a ride. We've had a couple of restocking launches that went up to the International Space Station. And then we had a couple Dragon launches where we took actual astronauts to the space station. But if you haven't been following this, Elon purchased two oil rigs, those floating oil rigs that are in the middle of the Gulf. He bought two of them, and he's outfitting them as launching stations in the middle of the ocean. So I'm wondering, it's speculation, but why the middle of the ocean? International seas, maybe less regulations, maybe you can get away with a little bit less oversight from the United States proper space agency or, stuff like that. So we'll see. Anyway, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. Right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Dania, your host, and we talk about things that are happening in tech on this program. So if you have any questions, hour number two of the program, we got another 50 minutes. I am taking off next week. I'll be somewhere in Northeast somewhere. Going to go over tonight. We're going to start driving through Pennsylvania. Tomorrow we'll be in Boston. Then we're going to go up to New Hampshire and go all points north. And that should be a really cool trip. I'm really a big history buff, and so never been to Boston, so I'm going to go check out Boston and everything else that I can come across of historical nature. It's a big hotbed of history in that part of the world, or part of the country, I should say. 330-729-9977. So I'm a spreadsheet guy, right? I use either Excel or Google. I think it's Google Sheets. Yeah, Google Sheets to do all of my spreadsheeting. I track everything. And one of the things that I do for myself and my customers is I like to know when it's time to replace stuff. And what I've noticed, I do this all the time. Like when I buy something, I already have an idea of how long I want it to last based on what I was willing to pay for it. And then once I feel really good about products that last longer than I really needed them to, but I know that if I wanted to replace them, I wouldn't halfway mind because it's already get on borrowed time. So I was at my office on Friday, and I have a Mac that I bought in 2009. And that sucker, it's not fast by any means, but I still use it every day. So if you consider, if 2009, we got 12 years of use out of a computer, and I probably paid every bit of $2,000 for it at the time, but I got maybe eight good years out of it. In the last three, it's been pretty doggy, but that's a considerable amount of time. If that thing died tomorrow, I mean, it would be, it's been in the family longer than my kid has been in the family. So I might have a nice ceremony for it as it goes off and goes to Mac heaven or something. But I started looking at like new electronics, and when costs come down on electronics, I have to shorten my expectations for how long those things are going to last. Like when I buy a computer, I want 5 years out of it. And then once 5 years hit, we're usually beyond that. I looked under my desk at a computer that I use for streaming, and it, 5 years ago is when I built it, and I'm nowhere near ready to see it go. So I think we're actually getting a little bit better value out of stuff now. I know you could have gone to the store. Like I bought my wife a $400 HP all-in-one because all she does is do web on it. So I wanted the very least amount of hardware that I had to throw at it that got her onto the web. Now, that thing I probably would have shot and put out to pasture and then shot about 3 years ago. She still tolerates it. Don't know how, but she still tolerates its speed because she doesn't need a whole lot from it. But we got maybe 2-3 years of useful time out of it. So when you proportionally, if you write down what your yearly cost is based on when it's ready to be replaced, it's probably pretty proportional. The $2,000 Mac that I get 12 years out of is probably cost the same as the $400 HP that I get 2.5 years versus the $1,000 Youngstown computer that I got, you know, maybe 7 years out of. And so it ends up being, you know, you can see what the yearly cost is. And you know, if you start putting money towards it, because I mean, what is it? How often? I was buying a cell phone every year. That's a $1,000 investment. And the only reason I was doing it is because they built the cost and the price of service. And so I was paying for it, but they masked the price of the hardware. So I never had to really see that every time I got a new one every year, there was another grand that I'd have to eat up and chew up in my rates. And that's one thing to notice, that even now that you have to pay full price or have a separate fee for, service rates have not really come down a whole lot from the time that you had, you know, the phone or the hardware leases or purchases as a portion of that. So very interesting, and I don't quite understand how they built so big of a hardware thing in a monthly fee, but it's kind of interesting. So anyway, I was just trying to get away with purchasing a keyboard that was a little bit on the cheaper side, because I beat stuff up with especially stuff that goes out in the field with me. I give it a less life expectation than typical, because it's not that I'm rough on it, but I just use it a lot in, you know, not office settings. I might be on a trail somewhere or in my motorhome or in the backyard on the deck or whatever. It's just, it travels with me, and so I expect it to get banged around. And that's, I just had to purchase another keyboard for my iPad. So as I told you before, like I can't get as much done on my iPad because I'm a physical touch, you know, kind of person. And if you put a keyboard on your iMac, or not an iMac, on your iPad, you have a touchpad that you can move around, and you have a full-blown keyboard that you can move around, and it's way better for getting stuff done. But I broke the stupid hinge because I'm, you know, opening it and closing it more than it probably wants me to, and I snapped it right off. But that one was way ahead of where I wanted it to last another year, and I ended up killing it and I have to buy another one. But that's very rare, very, very rare lately that I've gotten less time than my spreadsheet said that I should. So 330-729-9977. You can text me also at 333-1570. And I will pay attention to those text messages. Kind of a cool way of, as you're, you know, motoring around town, if you want to ask a question. We had the business show, and business show loves the text messaging side. I get them before, after, and all during the week about things people want to know about business. And as far as computer stuff, I always picture the end user of the information for this. So it's really easy to picture who the end user would be when we're talking about security and the vulnerabilities that come with using a computer. And then, you know, cost of ownership. I mean, how much of this stuff have we taken for granted at this point? It's just like it's a single function thing that does its thing. And I don't really think a whole lot about what I'm spending. I've been conditioned to buy the price tag as of right now. But it's not like I would shop another product. I've, you know, used an iPhone and I'll always use an iPhone. Or I use an Android and I'll always use an Android. And I think once we get into that vein of where we use things and we could stop thinking about it, then, you know, it just becomes normalized and standard, which I think is really good for the tech curve, honestly. But there is a segment even of this audience of people who still, even though they pay attention to stuff, haven't fully bought in to all things. So, you know, maybe you don't do your billing online. I love not having to write checks. In fact, I fight not to have to write checks. If there's a way that I could directly deposit to you or have my bank send you the check, I will totally do it, because I would much prefer putting a number in a box and hitting submit rather than writing out a check and putting in an envelope. I save so much time. I just don't like doing it, because it's just me transferring you a number, and I don't need to involve paper and me transferring you a number. I know that at some point somebody transfers it to a paper, the bank printed it out, and it goes out through the mail still. But on my end, I don't need to involve paper. If I can make it digital, I make it digital. And that's the part that most of you who are resistant to it are, you like the paper. You like to see the physical form of anything, because it's, you can slow it down and you can have more you know, control over it. And I still think to this day that the credit card it needs to go away. And if you've noticed, if you've gotten a credit card lately, they're shaped a little different, where they don't have the ridges on it, because you know why they had the ridges on those cards? It's so that you could make a copy, like you could put it in a knuckle buster, which was the little sheets that you put on, you roll it over and it makes an imprint of what your numbers were. Well, they had raised numbers so that they would respond to that. Well, nobody uses knuckle busters ever. Nobody makes imprints of cards ever, but it still was in the system to have a raised number system, because I don't know, because they've always done it, I guess. But now you'll see that the numbers are not on the front anymore, that they're on the back. And, you know, the four methods that you that have to supply when using the card are usually, you know, your credit card number, your expiration date, your billing zip code, and then the CV number that's on the card. So, again, not super sophisticated. And in fact, this is just total third party, but I've heard from a number of people that most of those systems require that you supply the number, that CV number, but aren't actually checking the CV number against something. And I've tried it with American Express is one that they challenge on the code on the front, and almost exclusively use American Express for most of my stuff. And I have two American Expresses that the numbers are very similar on. And if I use the wrong one, I do get turned away, because it actually checks it against American Express's system. Doing the challenge. But if you just go into a regular someone's shopping cart using a regular Visa or MasterCard, I got word from, you know, rumor from other people that some of those systems don't check it, but you have to supply it. So, but if you took it random numbers, you could get it to work. And same thing with the zip codes. It requires you to put it there, but it's not checking it against something. So that's why I'm a big advocate for the 16-digit credit card number from disappearing. Do something digital that, you know, changes so that it's not valuable to hold on to a 16-digit number. I mean, think about it. How many times do you have credit cards you have to replace? Now, I know there's probably a lot of different ones, but how many of those old credit cards get recycled to some unwitting person, right? So your card that you know is unsafe ends up with somebody else. And how do you know that you just didn't get a credit card number from somebody else? So You know, maybe there's enough of them that they don't ever have to reuse a number. But again, there's better ways than using a credit card, you know, a digit credit card. It could be completely digital without a known number, right? We have phones and we have watches that are tied completely to our identity. We can buy stuff with our phone and our watches, right? Because we carry everywhere with us. And it's secure to the point where it's really tough that if you're not me to use my phone to do anything, right? And so if we're trusting that our phone is our passport to spend money and to do things, we're already beyond where we have to supply a credit card number. I can pay for gas with my watch, and I bet you the machine doesn't know the credit card number. Now, the credit card number gets billed, but it's sort of like invisible to the mechanism. And that's what we would expect, that even if it translates down to some binary code that stays the same, that it's hidden so that it's not so easy. If you don't know your credit card numbers, that's a good thing. If you've never had to enter your credit card number, that's a good thing. There might be one associated with maybe like the serial number of your car. You don't use that very often, right? Well, that was a bad thing. So serial number of your computer, right? You don't use it all the time. So chances are nobody knows it except for you and the person who issued it to you. And that's it, because you don't type it into anything. You don't use it unless for, you know, warranty work or whatever. Another bad example, but you kind of get what I'm saying. All right, 330-729-9977. We had a bunch of people we talked to this week about innovations here in Youngstown. And so I know this is kind of businessy, but it's also technology. The LG battery plant and also the pickup truck over in Lordstown, but the pickup truck that we're building over here locally. These are pretty, you know, these kind of put us on the map of having some exposure into an emerging deal. And then you think that it's emerging because what Tesla has done with a, you know, the percentage of market share that they're getting overall, not just with electric cars, but with, you know, luxury and with sedans and SUVs and you know, they're a real choice up to this point. But having exposure in our area to both batteries, which is going to be a huge thing in the future. Because I'm telling you, there is not enough. There aren't enough suppliers of this thing. So it's going to be a major thing that if we have, you know, we have the process and we have a manufacturer and we have resources and we have the technology in our area, that's going to be a big deal. That's going to be a big value. So between those two things and an additive manufacturing, we're making a real big name for ourselves with electric, with battery, and with additive manufacturing. It bodes well for our relevance in, you know, sort of like the technology of the future. And that's just not cliche bumper sticker politician talk. I'm looking at it from the perspective of what I want our kids to be working on and what I want their kids to be working on in the future. So when people ask me, hey, what should we go get our education in? What should we get educated in? What practical skills can we wield here? And I'm looking around and say, okay, well, there's going to be a LG battery. We need some engineering. You need some manufacturing skills and you need a car manufacturer. Okay, we're really ready for that one. Additive manufacturing. I mean, that industry in itself leaps and bounds. You have no idea where that's going to go. But if you have, you know, we dove in, we bought some 3D printers, and then we bought the traditional PLA plastics that go into the stuff. Then we learned some of the software to be able to print those things. And then we designed and fabricated our own. So it's a process that once you get deep into it, you start going from, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, to, oh, I can see some really practical stuff out of this. All right, we'll come back. This is the Youngstown Computer Show, 330-729-9977. We'll be right back after this on 570 WKBN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your Saturday show. We get to talk about things that are happening in tech. We have all topics on the table. So if we're doing security and hardware replacement, doing a little bit of a SpaceX, but whatever's on your mind, 330-729-9977. And I guess, again, let me continue on with the protections against some of the for the malware. So earlier I had an example about a customer that said I wanted to, up my security protocols. And so I want to then point to you and see what you could do at home to also protect and preserve your stuff. Because most of the time, business data and your data are a little bit different. So your data is probably maybe some documents, some things you wrote up in Microsoft Word, but your really important stuff is usually going to be your pictures, right? Photos that you've taken, everything else, music, whatever, you could pretty much replace that stuff. You can re-download it if you have access to it. But that's the stuff you really want to key on. And when you go through your hard drive, you want to look for stuff that really would be hard to replace, if not impossible. And that's what you want to start with. So if you have a folder on your desktop, or you have my documents or my pictures and all your important stuff are there, well, then all you really have to do is have some kind of cloud backup that takes a snapshot of that every day and synchronizes up with the cloud. And for the most part, you're pretty protected. You might have to reload your computer if something bad were to happen, but that's, you wouldn't have loss. You'd have time loss, but you wouldn't have data loss. And so most of my computers, if you blasted them, like right now, there is nothing unique on them that isn't in other places. So I could just, if you took my computer in my office and killed it, I'll just bring up my laptop, and my laptop has the same stuff on it with the same programs on it and whatever. I make it pretty standard so that no matter where I am, I can operate. Now, the exception is that I have one computer that has Photoshop, and I use Sony Movie Maker or Sony Vegas to do all my video production work. And so most of my project files are on that computer because it's just easier than pushing them to the cloud, and they're pretty big. But every once in a while, I'll grab all of my project files and throw them out to OneDrive. They give me like 5 terabytes of cloud space. I create a project folder and just dump that stuff out there. And that way, I don't have it like to the day. But for the most part, most of the themes and templates that I use, I can replace pretty easily. I can recreate pretty easily. So I don't go crazy on how often I throw this stuff out to OneDrive. So what OneDrive is it's cloud storage. If you have like a Microsoft account or an Exchange account, you probably have access to at least a limited, maybe, 5 gigs, something like that, 50 gigs of storage space. So play around with it. It's probably free if you sign up for it and use the Microsoft account. You can mess with it and throw some of your stuff out there, and then you're safe. Like, the stuff isn't even on your computer. It's up on the cloud. When you install the OneDrive thing, it synchronizes it. So if there's something out in the cloud, it downloads it to your computer. So if you're at your office and you update something, it uploads it to the cloud. And then when you get home, it downloads it to the computer. So then you show up, you're like, oh, this is on this computer too. So it's kind of cool that way. But that's another way of protecting in case your computer gets hosed. In a heartbeat, if I went home and my computer didn't work, I'd reload it in 2 seconds and then just pull all my stuff back down. I've almost got 75% of the programs that I use are all web-based. So I used to have Outlook and all my PST files and all my email. Well, even though I can load Outlook on my machine, I don't. I just use the web-based version of Outlook to check my email, and then I don't have to worry about my email being exclusively on one computer and then having all that data consumed by it. So it's been, and I hope more programs, I read that Adobe is going to making their programs more application and web-based, because the different protocols that they're using, the markup language they're using to make web pages are getting more efficient and faster. So there might be a time when you won't be able to notice the difference between something that's happening over a web page and something that's happening through an app. You're probably already noticing that stuff starting to happen. So that's what predicting in the next couple years, you might not have standalone apps even. It went from things you had to install to apps. And then from apps, it might be just something that runs in a browser environment and that's it. You don't have to worry about developing any standalone local applications because there might not be such a thing as local applications. This Windows 10 S is sort of proof of that, where if they can build a product that isn't get resisted so hard, the S is garbage. It's not anything that's usable by most of us. But it looks, the general direction that they're going is they want controlled environments. And to get controlled environments, you have to have this stuff established. So in the future, I see that. If you can play around with getting your stuff You can do backups on external drives, or you can use cloud stuff, but the whole goal is to have these three things: local copy, local backup, offline or cloud backup. You have those three pegs to the chair and it stands. So 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. We'll be right back. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier. On social media, I said that I posted that I was drinking way too much coffee over the last couple months. And went from regular coffee to espresso and drank way too much. So I was really like caffeined out. So I decided that that was probably a bad thing, and I stopped drinking so much. But you know what happens when you stop drinking a lot of coffee and try to do less? Your brain punches the back of your eyeballs regularly. So I'm in that state where my eyeballs are being punched by my brain, and it doesn't feel all that great. So I'm keeping it together, though. 330-729-9977. There is a California this is a General Motors vehicle. Oh, the Cruise. Okay, so California Public Utilities Commission has authorized General Motors-owned vehicle company Cruise to provide driverless passenger service to the public in its robo-taxis. And it won't be the first time you've heard the name robo-taxis mentioned. Elon Musk and Tesla has been threatening to create a whole network of cars that drive themselves around. So this is relevant because this is a beginning of a company starting to do stuff like this, right? The CPUC said Cruise is the first entrant to its driverless pilot program, which lets companies give test rides in vehicles without drivers. Under the terms of the programs, Cruise may not charge passengers for their rides, and the company must submit quarterly reports to the CPUC about the vehicle's operations. Cruise has been testing its driverless vehicles in San Francisco last month and applied for the permit, which will allow the company to charge for autonomous rides and deliveries in the area. The company unveiled the Cruise Origin, a prototype vehicle without a steering wheel, pedals, or any controls associated with human driving last year. It's slated to begin production at GM's Detroit plant starting early 2023. Currently, most of the Cruise's driverless test vehicles are Chevrolet Bolt EV. So it's not a Cruise like the model Cruise. It's a Chevy Bolt, but the program is called Cruise. So how do you feel about that? Cars that don't have drivers in them. One of the most sexy versions of the robo-taxis model is that if you own a car that can be driverless, that you could allow your vehicle to enter the system on its own. And so like you drive to work, you drive your 10 minutes to work, you pull in the parking lot, and then you go into work. And then your car is then free to drive around and give people rides when you're at work. And then when you come out from work, your car's sitting waiting. You know nothing. You know, you don't know that anything happened, except for you get paid for your car to give people rides. And what I see, I mean, we really like owning cars here in the United States, especially, but probably the entire world. It's part of our freedom of just being able to go wherever we want, unencumbered. Anyway, so if you had a world, how many vehicles are necessary at any given time is probably less than the amount that we actually have. So if you just had access to a vehicle whenever you needed it, right? If you were 1 minute away or a couple minutes away from having you hit a button on your phone and a car that maybe has no driver comes and picks you up from the closest vehicle that was around you, would you buy a car? I mean, because that's really what it comes down to. When we travel in Gus, we didn't have a small vehicle to go into small towns and whatever, so we had to do Uber. And it was good enough because, you know, anytime we went into town, Uber was there. And then we didn't have to have insurances and car and go through the hassle of towing anything. And then COVID hit and things just got real gross. I just didn't want to be in people's vehicles, and they didn't want me in there probably at all either. And so we got a tow vehicle, but for a period of time, we kind of proved that out, that in a pinch, if it's available, if it's made cheap enough, that you'll totally call up a vehicle and have one at your disposal when you need it. So in the future, maybe we have only 50% of the cars that are manufactured today are manufactured in the future just out of necessity. We don't need to have so many of them and each having more than one when one is just made to be your disposable. They're talking about, like, Starlink, for instance. It's only going to have the capacity of like 500,000 people. I'm making that number up, but it's not a lot. And so the capacities that we intend are, you know, how many people are concurrent using a resource at any given time, that if you found a way to share that resource with multiple people, that you would have to have so many of them. So we'll say like workforce. We just talked about this last week. So manufacturing used to hire hundreds of thousands of people. Through the use of technology, the same company that does the same amount of revenue can do it with far less people because of that, you know, that technology. So there are less people necessary in those chains as those chains become more capable and more, you know, more technical. And so, you know, all of these things are going to require less and less and less and less, and which means that there's going to be less cars on the road, then there's going to be less car sales, then there's going to be less car sales people, and there's going to be less car repair people. But that's the technology that goes into when you make less of something, and that ripple effect downwards changes everything. Every marketplace gets changed by that advance. If you make something that lasts longer, then you make less of people who have to repair something. If you make something that less frequent, you know, breaks more frequently, then you have more repairs and you have more new, you know, new sales. And it's just the way things are. So if you built a car that lasted 100 years, I mean, what would that do? So this is just playing both ends. So we, you know, we make a higher capacity, or I'm sorry, we require less capacity. So we'll put it in terms of solar. Like right now, solar doesn't make sense because we use so much of it. But when we're on solar, what would happen if we figured out how to make less of it? Then we bring solar into making more sense. So we basically reduced the consumption of something and brought it, you know, more within line with what we're able to produce. So then I asked every guest this last week, if you have a bunch of companies that have workers that need jobs, what do you do with the plethora of genius that's out there? What are they going to do? Are they going to be starting businesses? Are they going to be innovating? Are they going to be – what are they going to do? There's going to be tons and tons of people who don't have to be in places that they used to be. So where does that open up? Where's the innovations in how we employ, how we start businesses? I think that's going to be our next scientific pursuit, or – something that we need to conquer in our evolution, is changing the way that we spend 8 hours a day. Maybe we spend less, right? Maybe we only work 4 hours a day because now, you know, proportionally, it requires less of us. So let's work, spend the same money and have twice as many people working half the time at a certain rate. But it gets weird. And again, I'm throwing this stuff out of there without any kind of the mechanics of cost attached to it, just vomiting words here at you. But it's a consideration. You have a car that has no driver that can service 20 people. You can compare that to your car who services one person and drives for 15 minutes a day. You can see what I mean here. Lots of waste versus squeezing the efficiency out of one vehicle that was produced, and its footprint of pollution and refuse and consumption just gets reduced or made more efficient. So anyway, I'm just, like I said, I'm talking out loud. That was a very interesting article. We'll see if the robo-taxi thing happens, and we'll for sure be able to talk more about it. I'm kind of glad that someone other than Tesla got a first crack at this. I really am, because I think Tesla would have been, because they have exposure to so many vehicles, I think that they would have been hit a little harder, maybe a little bit more pressure to do it well, because if they nail it, they're going to roll it out in their fleet. So I think that the regulators would give them a tougher pass, right? It put a little bit more stress on them, where if you have an underdeveloped version of General Motors, even if they get a successful robo-taxi going, they're not going to roll out 100 million of them and, you know, move too fast for the regulators to hit it with. So maybe this is contrived. I don't know. But I think it's Twitter blocked in Nigeria after deleting a tweet by its president. This is getting ridiculous, guys. It really is. I am 100% for the free flow of information. And this year has been the most embarrassing year for the free flow of information in my lifetime. Now, I get it that if you have no flow, that you hear and see things that you might not agree with, but this is absolutely getting ridiculous. So whether it be people being banned from social media for whatever reason, I don't have a lot of faith or trust in anything where there's a single person that gets to decide stuff. I just don't have any faith. So I'm sort of like recoiling from even participating in anything serious on any of these channels. And I hope all of you kind of see the trouble, regardless if you agree with whether or not. I mean, if you came to me and said that there's this terrible person that's now blocked on Twitter, it's hard to feel sorry for the terrible person. But I would feel terrible that somebody had the ability to block somebody they didn't like. What if you thought they were terrible and I didn't feel like they were terrible? And you blocked them, and now I don't have access to them. And that's just, again, very scary, very ridiculous. I don't think tech should ever play the part in being a decision maker on what goes through. I mean, I hear the explanation that these platforms and their business, they could do whatever they want, right? And it's my fear when we put too much power in individual companies. If they decide to go off the rails and do stuff you don't agree with, there's no turning back. If Amazon gobbles up all of the retailers and then goes wild, what are you going to do? Go build some more retailers after you decimated them? You can see that risk ahead of time, and you can keep retailers alive just to keep those big giants. So how you communicate, I mean, it's a tough thing, because how much news do I get from, we'll say, Facebook versus get my news from traditional media, news, the 11 o'clock news or the newspaper or, some kind of website? Well, technically, I haven't been getting any news. I stopped paying attention to it, back in before November. I see what people are talking on social media, so I'm following it sort of like by proxy, and I'm not really putting too much effort into it. I mean, it's literally not very valuable at this point. And that's sad, because I'm a talk show or a talk radio junkie. So the usefulness of information is a high priority, and I'm just not getting that in that, because I'll tell you, even if information is true, if it's been filtered out and I can't see what was filtered out or why, then it makes it less true, because I don't know how statistics work, but omissions are equally as valuable as the weight of the provability of words or a concept or how truthful something is. So anyway, 330-729-9977. And let's see. I had a question about last week about Linux and how big of a role that it still plays, or how often do I use it. And I went around and counted machines that we have Linux on. And it felt like I use Linux a lot more than I actually do, because I consider, like, if you use a Mac, there's some familiarity. If you use Chrome, there's some familiarity. But there's really only three machines in my office at this point that I'm using that have Linux on it that are part of my daily routine. Mostly it's Windows 10. I have four Macs. I have three Linux boxes. I have two Chrome operating systems. And then I have the rest of them, which is Windows, which was 8. I updated my inventory the other day. So that's how I kind of know where everything's at this point. Anyway, let me tell you about Youngstown Computer. I see a bunch of you have called and left voicemails over there, and I appreciate it. Both residential and commercial services. We have Rich that is operating the residential services, both bench work and field work, new hardware sales, upgrades. Like, the big one is the solid-state drives. And if you have an old mechanical drive, just switching over to a solid-state drive can add an immense amount of performance on the machine. So it's one of the number one valuable upgrades that we still do. Other upgrades, it's computers have been pretty solid. So there's not much. If you bought a computer and it's relatively new, you could put some memory into it and maybe a solid state upgrade. And that's as far as you really need to take it. If you're a gamer, you might want to get a little bit better of a video card, because, some of the ones that ship are good enough to display general stuff. But when you get into gaming, it requires a whole lot more horsepower to pull off. But if you want to get any of those going on the residential side, 330-259-7278. And then on the commercial side, we're sort of like we're external IT. Like we can come in and do what IT would, but there's some smaller companies that don't have the budget to have an on-staff IT. And that's where we come in and we fill that IT gap, right? And we've had customers that grow up and they have get enough computers and enough work that need to graduate into having internal IT. And we'll tell you that too. And so we're where we can offload some of that so that you don't have to do it internally, save yourself on some payroll. It does end up working out when you only have, you know, like we show up every other week, okay? And we do a walkthrough. So maybe you got 2 hours into us every other week. So you got about $5,000 worth of expense versus a full payroll for an IT person, which might be, you know, $50,000. So it's considerable savings. Even if you use us a lot, it's still going to be better than having, you know, internal IT. So 330-259-7278, that's the number you can call now. Use option one to get to the commercial side, option two to get to the residential side. Leave enough information and then either Nick or Rich will give you a call back and get something scheduled, get you put on the books. The way that the commercial services work when you're a new customer, we do a walkthrough. So we sit down with you first, and we just basically tell you how we operate. You know, we're a little different. We have different protocols than what you're typically used to. But we have two roles that we play. We have an emergency role, and then we have a regular elective role. Most of you will go through and do maintenances and, you know, install my printers. And there's really no fire about it. It's just, you know, it's on a schedule, right? But then there are emergencies. People are out of commission and their server just went down, or they need to get payroll broadcast and something's not working. And those are emergencies. So you have elective that really is important, but it's not like critical. But then you have emergencies that are critical now. And so we treat emergencies with a little bit higher priority. We'll go to some pretty big lengths to be able to like redo schedules to get someone deployed within a couple hours of you know something happening. And we tell people sometimes you are the beneficiary, right? So we came to you and responded to you and you totally appreciate it. But it's sometimes harder to appreciate when, you know, your appointment gets rescheduled because somebody had an emergency. So we lay that out on day one. You know, we take care of people and we respond appropriately, and we really hope that you know that people will become family with us. And we'll get to take care of them. So call us in, 330-259-7278. We'll get you set up with something and fix your problems. Again, that's Youngstown Computer, 330-259-7278. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. We got a couple more minutes in the program today. So if you want to get a quick call in, 330-729-9977. Someone just asked me and said, we talk about the Facebook profile scams. Don't know which profile scams you're talking about, so I'm going to just take a stab. Profile scam. Okay, so we were talking earlier about when somebody gets hacked, what is a logical thing that somebody does with a hacking. And Facebook is a huge target because of how many people are on it. So what I'm assuming this person is talking about is that when somebody gets their password phished, where they give it away to someone or it just flat out hacked, that a person can then take over their identity, like almost like a little identity, and use it to either scam friends of those people. But what happens, especially with the with sort of like the adult entertainment type of things on the internet, what will usually happen is someone will grab your profile and message people that you're friends with. So chances are you probably have a couple of people that you are connected with or friends with on Facebook that that are not real, right? So that they could message you and scam you. In fact, sometimes when you accept a new friend request between someone who's a little suspect and they message you right away and start saying, "Hi, how are you?" Like, you know that you're getting set up with a scam. And so I'll be like, "What do you want?" You know, and they'll say, "Hey, have you heard about this new blah, blah, blah?" And then I hurry up and get them off of my list real quick. But that's what I'm assuming that you're talking about, is being scammed by a profile that is of somebody that you know, either through a hack, or sometimes they'll just take somebody who has a lot of people and they'll create a duplicate profile of them, and then they'll friend request a bunch of people that they're also friends with, and then now they have, you know, their own Joe profile. And then they can communicate that way. And you see a friends pop up every day that say, you know, hey, don't accept a friend request from blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's pretty obvious that they pick off accounts pretty good. If you want to avoid this, there's a thing on Facebook called two-factor authentication. And what you can do, you go into your security settings on Facebook, find two-factor authentication, and then you're going to download an app called Google Authenticator on your phone. What this does is, if you ever log into a new computer, even if you have the right password, you are going to have to provide this six-digit number that changes every like 30 seconds. And so if somebody gets your password but they don't have the second factor of authentication, they can't log in as you. Now, it doesn't stop them from creating another profile, but that's easy enough. When you notice that somebody created another profile, just report the profile as a redundant one, and they're pretty good about kicking it offline and not letting it do its damage. But you got to be aware, as the recipient, and also sometimes you're the victim of that that's something that does occur, and it is extremely effective. A Facebook profile that has a lot of connections is valuable to someone who would want to scam, because you kind of let your guard down when your aunt messages you, right? But you got to use that same cynicism to be able to ferret out whether or not that's really your aunt on the other side of the messaging. And it's usually pretty easy to tell. The people who are hijacking these things are not trying incredibly hard to put theater behind selling that they are that person, right? In fact, most of the time they will immediately change the profile pictures to an attractive man or woman, and then post a link, if you'd like to see my hot pictures, blah, 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 click here. And then you'll know it's not your aunt, because, you know, whatever. But just be careful, because some of those profiles are a little bit on the risque side, or even the I can't even think of a word, just kind of gross side too. So when you see those, block those people pretty quick. I hope that's what you're talking to about profile hacks. That's what I assumed, and I hope that is helpful. Again, we're going to take next week off. We're going to be traveling, so we will come back here after the vacation full of energy. So you guys have a great week. And enjoy the rest of your weekend and next week. You've now listened to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. See ya.